North-South connection. We're back in the Rumble. I feel like it's been a while since we've been in the Rumble.
Yeah. Yeah, it has.
I wanted to start this episode with a really good contrast. Me yelling and you quiet.
That's usually how it goes.
I feel like we've started it. We've set this up well. And unlike last time dealing with entering the Royal Rumble, last time we were dealing with just Rick Martel. And I'd like to think we did a pretty good job covering the model's career.
I would say we probably in the top three ever podcasts of covering Rick Martel.
I did get a like from Rick Martel.
Oh, nice. Does he run that account, or do you think it's like his management team?
Do you think he has a management team?
I feel like it's like his son or something runs that account.
See, that I'd buy. I don't buy he's paying anybody to run his business affairs anymore.
Right. I would say it's like a family member or something running that. Or a fan, like a fan club type thing.
Yeah, it's like I'm running Uncle Richard's like Twitter account. Mon oncle Richard. Richard Martel. It's such a Quebecer name. But here we are diving deep into every single person who has entered the Royal Rumble. And we're chugging along. And so this is our final guy from the 1989 Royal Rumble we're starting on.
Amazing.
Today. Yeah, after today, we will have been done two whole Royal Rumbles.
That's not bad. I mean, that's a large chunk of guys right there. It's what, 50 entrants?
It does feel like we've done a lot more than that.
I don't know. I would say it felt less because I mean, we've done a bunch of those guys too.
Yeah, I suppose.
So 50 in an average has to be at least like most had to be at least in two, right? I would think.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. It's probably like an average of 2 point something because some are 3, 4, 5, some are 1 and done.
Yeah, we've done 45 guys. And we've done 138 Rumble appearances.
Yeah, okay, right. Because not some people are in 88 and 89, so, yep.
That's right. But anyway, here we go. If you've joined us before, you know the drill. If you're just joining us for the first time, you know we rank every Rumble performance in three categories. Mm-hmm. Those categories being presentation, creativity, and effectiveness. That gives us a score out of 60 between top 10 scores between the two of us. And and then we're ranking all the performances. So why don't we dive right into this? Because today we don't have a lot of guys, but there's a lot of meat on the bone, I think.
Correct. A lot to talk about with these two.
Yeah. All right. So here we go. Now entering the Royal Rumble.
Everybody's got a price. Everybody's gonna pay. 'Cause the $1 million man always gets his way.
The $1 million man, Ted DiBiase.
So much of the 1989 run for Ted DiBiase. I mean, 1999, the match is very much about him.
Yeah, I would say it's built around him in many ways. You have the story of him buying number 30 from Slick, sets him up for another chance to steal the world title, which he did in 1988, and then he comes out late at the end, and things have honestly set up pretty well for him. Hogan's gone, Savage is gone, right? So it's like,
it should be an easy run for him.
Yeah, and I said steal the world title, but I meant steal this match to set him up to potentially win a world title. So,
but you know, he's not good with things set up for him because he was set up pretty well in the WrestleMania 4 tournament. Mm-hmm. Also,
yeah, he seems to
shit the bed there.
He's like a low key choke artist that doesn't get talked about a lot. Like we often, you and I talk about his lack of quality pay per view matches, but even a kayfabe sense when it comes to big time matches like this, like he often comes up quite short. In tailor-made situations.
Yeah. It's crazy he never really... I mean, at this point, would you have imagined him the only title... Like, if you're watching 1989, would you imagine the only title he would ever win would be the tag team title?
No, and that was almost just, like, end-of-the-run type stuff, but...
Yeah.
No, it's crazy. It's tough in a way, too, because he almost got... There's not too many guys in that time frame, and maybe I'm just wrong and not thinking about it, but... And this actually crossed my mind on our debut of our new project, the No Holds Barred, that dropped, talking about guys that went go start at world title level and then come down, because Pedro Morales did that, right? He was like world champion and then he was IC champion. But during the stretch, that's kind of a rarity. So I think part of the problem with DiBiase in this era may have been that they put him in the world title picture so quickly that it almost would have felt weird. Like, he never really gets the IC picture. Like, he'll fight guys that are IC level, but he's never really like a contender for the Intercontinental title. And I think it's just because of where he started, he always just was a world title guy until he eventually transitions to be a tag team guy.
Yeah, and you contrast him with, say, a guy like Rick Rude, who kind of walked up the ladder instead, right?
Yeah, or like a Bret Hart, a Mr. Perfect, right? Like all those guys that were in that IC division in that time, even the Warrior, right? Like we're moving their way up versus him just coming right in, which is kind of unique at this point of coming right in and just being a main event player. And I do think that ends up creating a stigma of him that blocks him from going after like other titles. Like it would have felt weird kind of maybe if he was IC champion. The closest he comes is Messed Around Tornado, but even then it was just to help Perfect get the belt back.
Right. Yeah, like he was above the division in a lot of ways.
Correct. Yes, because he doesn't have that climb. So even guys who maybe go IC world and then come back, maybe it would feel okay. But I don't know, like Bret Hart never came back to the IC title division. You know, so it's just weird. Like now that DiBiase was world champion, but...
Well, very few guys up until recently do.
Right.
The only one I could really think of besides Morales is Triple H. But even that felt like... I'm just going to fuck over Chris Jericho or whatever that was.
I mean, maybe you could go like Cena with the U.S. title.
Yeah, that's what I mean by recent.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. Yeah, before that, no, it was definitely not a thing. Steve Austin was not toiling around the IC division once he was a made man, right? So, no, 100%, yes. Maybe you could say like a Kane, you know, like guys like that. But, you know, when you're around 30 fucking years, like you're more likely to happen, but...
Yeah, like it's very much a thing like with like The Miz.
Right.
Right. Like The Miz was world champion. I mean, probably should have never been world champion, but and then he was Intercontinental champion for 8 years.
But even then he was IC champ and US champ before world champ. You know what I mean? Like he was in that mix. DiBiase just was immediately a world title contender.
You know, it's funny. I think I've mentioned this before. I think that was their biggest mistake with the Roman Reigns push.
Right. Oh yeah. 100%.
I mean, yeah, he had the Shield stuff, but it was like, no, now he's a main eventer.
Correct. I mean, maybe Sheamus is one that kind of pulled it off, but yeah, even he had the ECW stuff for a while.
But people were mad when Sheamus won, and I do think that probably hurt him, because I mean, I have no secret how much I love Sheamus, but I don't think he really gets the credit he deserves for being as good as he is, and I think maybe some of that is because he was pushed a bit too fast too soon.
Well, and he had the stigma of being Triple H's buddy.
Right.
And we're way, of course.
That guy.
So Virgil heads down with DiBiase. Gorilla's all pissed about that. He's like, he can't stay out here. And Ted takes his time, and he understands the strategy right out of the gate.
Goes right after Hercules, and I love that Jesse's like, certainly, that's his slave.
We're at the end stages of that feud, for sure. This is like the final days.
Yeah, I just love how matter-of-fact Jesse is about it. The other thing I want to mention, though, too, is that even before he gets in the match, they're talking about him a lot.
Oh, yeah.
I think that plays into how important he is to this match, because
it's
he's
his
a
Rumble.
Focus. Yeah, he's a focus despite not even being in the match for most of it.
It's his Rumble, even with Savage and Hogan and the Mega Powers. Like, if you have two big, I mean, would you say the four most big takeaways, right? It's the Mega Powers, DiBiase, Andre's Dominance, and Demolition Fighting, right? And those are kind of the four things that stand out. But the match itself is really structured around DiBiase, especially once Andre goes out.
Yeah, maybe Jake and Andre.
Yeah, Jake and Andre.
Throw that in too. But yeah, and like, he's, and as soon as he gets in, people are on him and he's on everybody. But I do really like his selling for Hercules right away.
Yeah, and he's front and center too. Like, he's a focal point immediately, battles the Rooster center stage and throws him out. And like, everyone kind of goes to the corners and he's just in the middle of the ring beating on the Rooster.
Yeah.
So immediately a focal point. It's just one thing. There's only so many ways you could break these matches and performances down, but that's one I've kind of clung to a bit, is like, how much like center stage shine do these guys get in the ring?
Right.
Do they get us in the middle of the ring or in the front of the ring in the camera side? Do they get that moment to like hit their shit? You know, like a lot of guys don't. They come in and they're in the corner the whole time.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's very true. I love too that there's a moment where Beefcake saves saves him from Hercules.
Mm-hmm.
Beefcake came cheap, right?
Yeah, confusing.
Yeah, like it was like he probably only paid him like what, like $15-$20.
Maybe some new scissors.
I'll tell you what, Beefcake, I'll get you the new big shears. I love too that Jesse and Gorilla like are talking like Jesse goes to Gorilla, oh Gorilla, you're just jealous because you can't afford a bodyguard when they're talking about Virgil. And Gorilla concedes. It's like, I guess you're right.
Hard to argue.
Yeah. But everything he does in this match has quite a bit of heat to it too, which is really nice.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, he's hammering Stud. He's facing off with Martel. He's getting squished between Stud and Akeem at the end. He's doing the begging off. Like it's a good heel performance.
Mm-hmm.
And he also gets that that elimination of Beefcake and Herc in the sleeper, which is nice.
Yes, which is really cool. I know we've talked about that in the past. So I mean, he does work around with those guys, but the problem is, as he's taking those guys out, like we've covered a million times with this Rumble, we're starting to run thin on quality opponents. Once the workers start to dip out.
Yeah. And like, don't get me wrong. Like I like DiBiase, but he's in there with Big John Studd at the end.
Mm-hmm.
And there's only so much he can do. But he's taken some pretty sick. He's taken some sick bumps. Like there's that one where Studd gets him in the choke and throws him into the turnbuckle.
Yep.
Like that looks like it hurts. I think that ended Sting's career, right?
Seth Rollins close to it. And it's he's aggressive too. Like he's really peppering away at Stud where he can. And then he starts barking orders at Akeem. Like, do you feel like him, that trade off of numbers in the payola, did that include Akeem like kind of working for him too in the match?
I think guys understood that if they did what he said, they'd be paid backstage.
Right, right.
So I don't know if that was part of the original deal, but definitely some money was. Then again, he lost, so maybe he just kind of stormed out of there.
Or maybe said, screw off, fake African dream. So he's barking orders at him a lot, but he lets him do a lot of the heavy lifting on Stud, and Jesse's putting over. Like, DiBiase always uses his brains in the ring. And then we get the miscommunication with Akeem begging into DiBiase, and he gets shoved out.
Yeah, and then we're left with Stud and DiBiase, and it's not good for DiBiase.
No, but I love too. Jesse right away is like, DiBiase should just pay him off. Like, don't even fuck with him. And he does. He tries right away, which I thought was good character stuff. He tries and tries, but Stud just bullies him and throws him out.
Yeah. And as he's throwing him, Jesse's in the midst of saying, he's a darn good wrestler. but yeah, like, a good showing. And like, you're right. He really does carry so much of the match in terms of storyline.
Mm hmm. It was good. I mean, Ted was masterful. I thought he looked strong. Eliminating guys, he played it smart. Directing Akeem. That said, we talked about it. I don't think we need to go into it again for the millionth time, but he should have won. Stud did not need it. DiBiase buying 30 and stealing the win could have been a hook for years.
I won the first 30-man Royal Rumble. I outlasted 29 guys.
And it would give something for Gorilla to talk about. That time, DiBiase bought his way to the Rumble, right? Like Valentine warming up and Jericho's two win. Like, this could have been a thing for him for years and years. He bought the world title. Now he bought a Royal Rumble.
Yeah.
I'd even go so far as saying you could have had Stud get eliminated and then Akeem just leaves the ring if you really want to put over that he buys it, right? DiBiase actually pays him and he leaves. Or not, if not Akeem, somebody else, right? That he pays off to win, to leave, and he wins by legitimately buying a Royal Rumble.
Oh, Gorilla would be so disgusted.
Oh, it would have been really good. And I mean, for what? Yeah, yeah. To have Stud this fake win. You know, it's like, and DiBiase could use the bounce back because he's out of the title picture. He's going to be a little aimless throughout all 89 with Jake on the shelf. So I think like this could have given him a good hook. So it's a good showing that could have been an all-timer if he won like he should have.
Yeah. And it's crazy because as much as we've talked about him being part of the most important, one of the most important parts of the match, he's only in the match for 6 minutes.
Right, which is crazy.
Yeah, 6 minutes, throws out three guys, and finally gets eliminated by Big John Studd.
Right, and I'm definitely overrating this, which I know, so we'll see. It comes court time.
Definitely what, sorry?
Overrating his performance, but it's okay.
Yeah, whatever. So look, I'm at a 5 for presentation.
Yeah, I went 6. I mean, he felt like the big deal. The big cheese. They talked about him all match. Jesse's hyping the shit out of him. He had a lot of shine in the ring. You know, he tried to get his gimmick, tried to buy off Stud. Like, I just think he hit all the beats here.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you. I just, like, I can't get over the hump of the 6 minutes.
Right.
Like, in terms of long-term presentation.
But he maximized the shit out of
work,
6 minutes.
I'm going to... He did, and that's why he gets a 5 for me, as opposed to, say, a 3, right? Work rate, I'm at a 3.
So this is where we really differ. I went with a 6. Because, again, I thought the creativity and work rate in here from him was really good, and all the character stuff that played into it. He racked up 3 eliminations in 6 minutes, made the final 2. But also, through all of that, like, was just showing, like, working through his gimmick and his work. Like, I liked how aggressive he was at Stud. I loved him directing Akeem, trying to buy off Stud, dumping Beefcake and Herc when they're tussling for no reason, dominating the Rooster. Like, I just thought he really just had, like, a dominant 6 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, look, I liked it too. It's just, like, because the longevity isn't there for me, like for instance, like, I mean, I gave a 6 to Shawn Michaels in 1996.
Right. Well, you know what I mean? That,
huh? Yeah, you know, or Shawn Michaels 2007, a 6. Michaels, right. 2010, a 6. Right. So, like, I mean, when I'm doing these rankings, I'm almost constantly going back and comparing, which is why I'm at a 3. But that 3 is not a disrespectful 3. It's like, oh, okay, like, I want to give him credit for the good work he did.
I just think he did as much good, but in a different way. So, yes, he didn't have a 25 minutes of bouncing around, but he also didn't have 13 minutes of laying around. You know what I mean? Like, that was, like, the most active 6 minutes you may get.
But see, I don't actually think he was that active. Like, I think he did good work in the 6 minutes, but I do think there was a bunch of clutching and grabbing, too, which I know goes kind of part and parcel with the Royal Rumble, right? I get that totally. But I as much as I like some of the selling, there was a bunch of just kind of wrestling around the corners, too.
Yeah. You could be wrong. It's okay. All right. Effectiveness. Anyway, I went with a 5. Again, I think he set the tone with the buying of the spot, trying to pay off Stud, all the stuff I've been saying. Like, I just think it was really effective. It's a super memorable appearance for him.
Yeah, I'm at a 4, but all the same reasons. So, yeah. So that gives him a total of 29 points.
Yeah, which is pretty good.
And that, yeah, it's very good for 6 minutes. That ties him with Randy Savage from 1990. And I think it seems obvious to me he should probably be ahead of Randy Savage from 1990.
I think so, given this is one of the most, I think, you know, I factored that too. I think this is one of the most memorable things. Like I said, I mean, it's probably a top 2 memorable thing from 89, which is kind of a forgotten Rumble, I think, at times, you know, outside of the Mega Power stuff. But,
yep.
Like, it's just, it is talked about for a long time. Even though he doesn't win, they do always bring up that he bought number 30. Like, that's a thing.
Yeah. And I think this was also a Rumble where they were figuring it out.
Right.
Right. Like, just as a company and how to book it. And I think that's actually quite admirable. Like, I mean, I wouldn't put this in the top tier of Rumbles. I mean, we're kind of closing the door on Rumble 89 right now, too. I wouldn't put it in the top tier. But I think for a try where you're figuring it out, I think they did a pretty damn good job.
Yep. I'd agree.
So that lands Ted DiBiase 1989 as the 17th best Royal Rumble performance of all time.
And now, never have to talk about 1989 again, thankfully.
It's done. That shitty Royal Rumble. Now, is his next one better, though?
I think there's a chance. And I love the booking again here. Like, 2 straight years, he's got some great booking because he gets number 1 after buying number 30 last year. And they talk about it a ton. Even Fink says it in the intro. The man who drew 30 last year and gets number 1 this year, Ted DiBiase. And he's pissed, too. He, like, comes out with a chip on his shoulder. He's marching out with Virgil. The heat's great. Like, you could tell he knows he's got some fucking work cut out. And he's not going to be able to pay his way out of this one.
Yeah, I love it. I'm a little sad they don't have his music yet.
Yes.
Yeah. Is he the top heel in the company here? And is that a good thing if he is?
It's probably him or Perfect, right?
Right. Yeah, I always kind of forget about Perfect because I love Perfect so much. I almost don't view him as a heel because I love him, you know?
Right, right.
But yeah, like... I feel it's almost a bit of an indictment at the top of the card that he's still the number one, like, up there.
Right. But again, I think it speaks to how he came in.
Yes. Yes. But it's clear. It's obvious. Looking at it, it's almost obvious why they go with Hogan and Warrior at WrestleMania.
I think that's yes. There was no way. I mean, Zeus was probably or reheating Savage, I guess, but
right. Yeah, I guess he could, but that wouldn't have been as good. He's got his work cut out for him in this one. Like, and this is a hot rumble and he's a big part of it. And he starts with Coco, and I love that he jumps Coco before the bell.
Yes, again, just completely locked in and pissed off, just trying to, and it's such a great strategy because he wants to clear guys out to keep control of the ring, right? So Coco comes in, they fight for a bit, he throws Coco out. Marginetti comes in at three, and he fights him off, right? So, like, it's a cool strategy for number one here to set the tone. Again, DiBiase kind of setting rumble tones of how number one could work.
And I really like, I like DiBiase in these little sprints.
Oh, yeah.
I wish if more, cause it's like, well, this is our problem with DiBiase is I find that like his matches end up being boring, right? But then he has these little sprints with Coco, with Jannetty, the right. match with Bret Hart at the Survivor Series is like, oh my God, like he is really good. Like, where is this guy usually?
And I like here too, is he gives that shine and then throws, like the timing is so good. Like he gives a bunch of shine and then he eliminates these guys like right before, the next guy's going to come out. So it's just like perfectly structured.
Yeah. Yes, I agree. And I love too, at the beginning too, that Jesse is really pushing that he has to go through the whole roster.
Right. Yes. Right. He's going to really march through.
Yeah. And if he doesn't do it, he's not going to. Yeah. And I love too, that the crowd, when they see him come out, it's like the crowd gets it from the year before. Like mm-hmm. they followed the story. And so they're cheering that right. he's getting punished. Like, I don't know. I love shit like that. I think it just makes sense.
No, it's great year-to-year booking of this specific pay-per-view that he's getting host. And then Jake the Snake is next. So you know he's not clearing him out right away. So now it's on.
No.
And I love how he meets him outside the ring. So it's, again, the aggressive behavior of DiBiase trying to really knows he's just got a long night ahead and he needs to get rid of these guys as quick as he can. And the crowd is just molten as they fight outside the ring until Savage comes in.
Yes. And then Savage and DiBiase team up a lot.
Oh yeah. This sets up the big through line.
Yeah. Which I think like is, it was always weird. It's so strange to mm-hmm. see them working together after like trying to kill each other 2 years right. earlier. They beat on Jake and then Piper comes out and then we get that. I mean, we've mentioned this a bunch of times. And we'll probably mention it again, how incredible that sequence is with Piper, Jake, DiBiase yes. and Savage. Yeah, like
it's amazing. And they're just feeding and bumping like madmen for Piper and Jake. Just a dream tag match right there.
Yeah. And what I like too, is they keep trading partners too.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, Piper will go with DiBiase, then he'll go with Savage, and then they keep switching around, right? DiBiase has a great sell on reverse atomic drop from Jake here.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it just looks so freaking painful.
And his offense is good, too, though. He's got a lot of good hard knees, some strikes, as they keep playing out this battle. Just nonstop attack. They're never stopping, never slowing down. And he spends a lot of time with Jake, as you would think, but he's able to hang in and survive until Savage, you know, pays off, or Ted pays him off, but the partnership pays off as Savage eliminates Jake. And we even get the pantomime that he kind of confirms that he's going to pay him, which is, again, a great through line. Peter Winston has a great theory of how they've always been working together for all these years, ever since Savage turned heel. Until he turns face again, like they always seem to cross paths and work together throughout this next couple of years. And this was definitely one of them.
I'm sure Savage was grateful for that sweet scepter. But that was a kingly gift that he gave the Macho King Randy Savage.
It's better than a sweet sapphire.
Fuck yeah. And like everybody who comes in at the beginning goes right after DiBiase too.
Yes.
Like Brett goes right after him. He ends up teaming up with the Warlord on Jake. There's a lot of heel camaraderie early in this match.
Well, there's a fun sequence, too, where Dusty's just pummeling the shit out of him in the corner, and the crowd's chanting along with it. Brett and Dusty double up, and, I mean, DiBiase is really getting worn down. But he does find energy. Like, he starts bringing the fight back to those two guys, and Jesse even talks it up. Like, Ted DiBiase's still going strong, and it's so impressive how long he's been in there. You know, he's taking little breathers, but then he comes right back with fire. It goes out, like, smash and stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I love, too, there's a sequence with Dusty where they're both super tired.
Yes.
And they're both on their knees,
yes,
punching each other.
Yep.
I thought that they did a really good job of selling the exhaustion of the match.
Mm-hmm.
Because Dusty's in there a long time, like, too. Like,
yeah, no, they both are. They're in there for a stretch. And it's like, yeah, they're both worn out. And the crowd is buying into it. Jesse's hyping it up. Again, yeah. DiBiase is a trendsetter for these.
Do you think at any point during this match, Piper like really laid into him about his treatment of Virgil?
I don't know if that was quite on Piper's mind yet.
No, he was just all in for like the punching and clobbering.
A little too busy right now.
Yeah. So he gets worked over by every face that comes in. Demolition beats him up. Even Akeem beats him up. I guess he was angry from the year before.
he did not get paid after he failed the job. But yeah, I mean, he really takes a beating. He looks hackered, but he looks strong. Like, he'll take a beating and then he bounces back. And Jesse continues to hype up how surprised he is. There's a funny bit where Smash almost has DiBiase out. And Virgil yells at Dino Bravo to help him, and Dino runs over and helps him, which I thought was kind of funny.
Surprised Dino understood him.
Maybe just offers him some cigarettes or something.
Right. Yeah, Jesse, the whole time, is putting over the longevity.
Yeah, yep. And like, him being, I mean, a marked man, too.
That's it. Like, every few minutes, he's putting him over. Mm-hmm. Now, I mean, I do think there's a couple of problems here. And the first problem is I watched this after I watched the Rick Martel longevity thing.
Right, right.
And I think that ends up hurting this a little bit. So, for example, by entrant 9, there's like no near eliminations on DiBiase.
Right.
Now, I know that that feels like a small thing, but it is the Rumble, right? And that's kind of what makes it exciting. And I think like he was really involved in everything, like, action wise until the Warlord comes in. And then from that point on, not that he's not good, he's good, but he ends up getting a bit lost in the shuffle.
A little bit. The ring does fill up quite a bit, but again, this Rumble itself isn't as much about him, right?
Yeah.
As much as like other ones would be. So I don't bury him too much for, I mean, go into like 40 minutes or whatever he goes and has some quiet moments, but he's not meant to be there like a Martel, where it was like the story was built around him making it that far and setting records, you know?
Well, it was built around him getting comeupance from the year. Like the Rumble was built around him to a point.
Yeah, kind of. I don't know. It didn't bother me as much as normal. I think when he did wrestle, like was involved, it was hot. You know what I mean? Like, he didn't, like, lay around and then just do, like, tepid work. It would be, like, spurts of, like, you know, big effort.
No. No, yeah. Not at all. I just feel that, like, it feels almost unfair to compare the two, especially since Martel's comes after.
Right.
But it's kind of the job of the project.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's like, I felt bad as I was watching it. I'm like, oh, like, I kept going back to it. Like, for instance, like, Martel comes into this match and has a better near elimination than anything DiBiase does in the whole match, right?
Do you think that helps pay off when he does get eliminated, though? Like, that no one had even touched him, and then he just gets chucked?
I don't know. Maybe, but there's probably also something, too, of like, oh, this guy survived again.
Right. Oh, I think it's just two different ways to cut that apple.
Yeah. Yeah, like, I know it sounds like I'm coming down hard on him. I'm not. Like, I think his performance is really good in the match. But I do think it's worth talking about that. Right. It's, for me, it's not quite as good an Iron Man performance as Martel.
No. And I don't think anyone would ever hold it up as such. Martel is like the gold standard of Iron Man, though. You know what I mean? Like, you know, that's like saying, well, you know, this title reign was great, but it wasn't Hulk Hogan 1987. I mean, you know, it's like,
sure.
That's kind of what Martel is to this. Right. So it's almost a hard, you know, I don't know. I think it's like a hard comp to make. It's a fair one to show that he's not that.
Yeah. Right,
but it's also, I don't punish him too much because he's not the best at it.
Right. Because I think you have him rated higher than Martel.
I do?
I think so.
All right. We'll take a look.
Which is fine.
Yeah. We'll take a look. We'll get there.
I'm just more curious about that. So anyway, back to what's happening, right?
Yeah. He's part of the crew that takes our earthquake. So that was fun. He's like kind of leading that charge.
Well, and that's the other thing is that once you get past, like, I like his elimination of Coco and Jannetty and helping Earthquake. But I think he probably could have used a couple of higher profile eliminations on his own.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Would like, you have had him maybe eliminate Jake? But I like the Savage story, you know?
No, I like the Savage one. But maybe, you know, maybe he tosses Bret Hart.
Right. But right? You kind of needed Earthquake to get some of those too. And who tosses Bret? Andre? Like, you had to save some for him.
Yeah. Yeah. I just wanted him to be more involved is my thing.
He's not booked.
Not booked. Not involved. Yeah. And then finally, you know, he's in there with Earthquake. He's doing this. And then Warrior comes in and we got to clear the ring. And when Warrior, I will say the elimination is really good.
Yeah.
Like the velocity with which he goes over that top rope and the rebound off the ropes is, I mean,
well, that's why I was saying before almost like, was it better that we didn't like, it's two ways to slice it. Right? Like Martel, it was like, oh God, he keeps hanging on, keeps hanging on. Oh, they finally got him. Versus this is like, man, this guy is like, fuck, he may go all night. Like, he's been in 40 minutes and no one's even gotten him out. No, close, you know? And then Warrior just doing it so quickly. It was like, oh shit. Like, you know, like it almost resonated in a different way.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I think that could have been heightened if he was a bit more involved.
Yeah.
Say from the Warlord part to there. Like, you know, like the complete contrast of that is like Brock in 2020.
Right.
Right. Where it's like, oh God, nobody's going to get this guy out. And then they do. Right. So, yeah, I think it's somewhere in there, and it makes a lot of sense. But I love that elimination, and it was the right guy to eliminate him, too, I think.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, Warrior's going to do it. I liked the little bit right before that, too, where Anvil and Warrior are, like, kind of on him, and he slips between them, and they just start fighting instead. That was kind of cool. But it was a dangerous game for DiBiase. Again, he stays aggressive for him to go back at Warrior, like, during this match, like, at this point, and it ends up costing him. But he does end up assisting, you know, throwing out Anvil before he gets tossed, too. So I thought this was great. I thought it was a really impressive night. The first true Iron Man, eliminations. He was a workhorse for a lot of the match. Aggressive, his selling, he was central to the match, played off the story from the year before. The heat was really good when he gets eliminated because of the build, and I think it's one of DiBiase's best pay-per-view showings.
I would definitely agree with that. Look, I'm high on him. I thought he was presented I think he's presented better here than he was the year before,
right?
So I'm at a 6 for presentation.
I went 5. I had him I actually had him 1 below. Because he's presented well in the construct of the match. We've talked about this a million times. Guys that come in at the end are always going to have less time. So naturally, he's going to have more time to show off. But he didn't feel like a threat to win as much as he did in 89. Like, 89, there was a couple paths for him to win. Buy it, win it. Like, and it both felt like legitimate possibilities.
Right. I'm at a 5 for work.
Okay, yeah. I was definitely high here with a 7. I had Martel at an 8. So I did not have him higher, but I'm going to come down to a 6 based on our conversation today.
Oh, you know what I'll do to balance that is I will bump up. I'll bump up to a 6 too.
Okay.
How's that?
That's good.
Yeah. Did that work on the sheet? Let me just check.
No, I got it. So then you're going to go to 16. I'm going to 17. So we're still at the same overall total.
Okay. Good. Yeah. Okay. Good. And for effectiveness, I went a 4.
Again, I went a 6. He's the first Iron Man. I love the payoff from the year before. You get the Jake stuff with working with Savage. He looks strong early. Helps put over Warrior. I just, you know, was part of the Earthquake Coalition. He had 3 eliminations, so I thought he had a very good night.
Yeah, I did too. I'm just a little let down that he kind of disappeared for that period, but. But again, I brought up the counterpoints just as more talking points. Mm-hmm. I still loved his performance. Like, don't get me wrong. You know, like, I just thought it was an interesting contrast.
Right.
And then it's funny because, like, we say, like, Martel's the gold standard, and he is. But Martel's going to get passed the next year, too. Right. So, yeah, I guess it's just what it is. Right.
Yeah.
All right. So that gives him a total of 34 points.
And 33, 17 and 16.
It's just the sum is not there. Okay, so 33. That lands him as the 13th best overall Rumble appearance.
All right, that's pretty good.
Yeah, he actually breaks up Hogan's 91 and 92.
Right, perfect.
So good for him getting in there. And it lands him 5 spots below Martel.
Okay, for now. That feels about right.
Yeah, yeah, it does. And the guys in between them, it's like Martel 91, Andre 89, Michaels 95, Savage 89, Hogan 91.
Yeah, I think that's good.
Yeah, that seems fair. That seems fair. So the next one, he doesn't last as long.
No, he comes in early again, number two. Yeah. And he's a veteran of this slot after 90. He's very aggressive again. He comes right at the British Bulldog, who was number one. He's fast and angry. Gorilla's hyping up DiBiase's past success as an actually, I thought he was really good here. Like, we get some different offense. He's focused. What's the meaning? He's trying to make a mark. But then he turns his back and Bulldog chucks him out. And I thought this was super disappointing. In a way, you pay off his last time again where he did this to guys and he gets thrown out before the match even gets going.
Yeah.
But this was a shock. I remember even at the time, like, this was a shock. He was great in that less than 2 minutes, but it was sad to see him go. So I don't know if he was hurt. I mean, the tag champs within weeks after. I don't know if they did this just to do a shocking moment. Like,
well, I think the booking of the match needed him out.
Yeah, I guess he can't really be around later. Yeah, well, I mean, now. But you could have done someone else at two. You could have thrown fucking Repo Man at two. You know what I mean? And like a DiBiase later.
Yes. But I wonder if they viewed DiBiase and Flair as like a similar character.
Right.
So they didn't want them kind of, you didn't want too much focus.
Why even put him in the match then? Like, why not? The undercard was so weak as it was. Like, they could have had him. I guess he's going to be in the world title match. Yeah, all right. It is what it is, I guess. It's like a tough thing to see. Like he's such a veteran and stalwart of these matches and literally, but I guess it plays up that like anything could happen in the Rumble. So
yeah, it was shocking. When he comes out with Sherry. And we get the creepy guy with the Sherry shirt.
Yes.
The look on that guy's face, I don't even know how to describe it, but like it's not right. If DiBiase wrestled like this all the time, I think we just mentioned this, I would love him.
Yeah. Yeah, he was great here. I mean, I think he knew he had like under 2 minutes and just had to fucking make a sign.
And I mean, even Bobby's shocked. Oh no. He gets a big oh no on the clothesline.
Right.
And Gorilla's like an opportunity wasted down the drain. But I mean, look, it's a nothing run, but it's still good. Like I remember at the time being shocked. And it's not like he got eliminated by Tito Santana, you know, like.
Oh no. And Bulldog, we know from the year before, is like a legit player.
Yeah. That's it. So he lasts 118. I don't know. I felt a bit generous, I guess, on presentation. I went with a two.
I gave him one because I felt kind of sad. He doesn't even have like any of his suit on. Like he just I don't know. He just looked kind of haggard.
Yeah. He's like, fuck it. I'm not putting the suit on if I'm lasting under 90 seconds. But I did like his work. So I went at two.
Yeah, me too. And I wish we could have seen more.
Yes, 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 yes. Zero for effectiveness though, because he was not effective.
None.
In any way.
Zero effectiveness.
So that gives him a total of 7 points. And that ties him with Warrior 88, Butch Reed 88, Rick Martel 93, Jake Roberts 97, Marty Jannetty 90, and Sam Houston 88.
He feels better than all those guys.
You know, Martel 93 is a Final Four appearance.
Right. But still.
Yeah. Yeah, Warrior's disappointing. Whatever. I'm happy to put him ahead of all of them. I don't care.
Yeah. I mean, maybe. It's up to you on Martel, but. Martel didn't exactly Martel's do not, much.
Martel's not in the top of that anyway.
Right, right.
We have the Warrior as the top of that little heap.
Yeah.
But let's put him ahead of all of them. So that leaves, it was memorable. That puts him as the 99th best Rumble appearance of all time. But we're not done with Ted.
Mm-hmm. 1993 comes in at number four. So early yet again. It's kind of become his thing now. Is karma punishing him after buying 30.
Were you expecting him to come out in the white tights here?
I was hoping for it.
Yeah, he did not. He came out in the black.
But he's now a tag team champion.
Yeah.
And he steps right into this classic Legends battle with Flair and Backlund. So it's kind of cool, like these three guys throwing down here.
Yeah, I loved it. I thought, oh, wow, this is a really interesting like trio to do this with.
And they double up Backlund and can't finish him off, which will come back to haunt them.
He haunts everyone in this match, Buck Backlund. He's like the fucking specter, like the match. He comes in and, you know, he does that trio. And then right away, the next guy in is Knobs. Mm-hmm. And Knobs is just all over this poor guy.
Yeah, which is good because that's the tag title feud right now. The Nasties had just turned. and are coming for Money Inc. and Jimmy Hart. So actually, it's kind of a low key forgotten moment in here. Like you think, oh, it's just fucking Knobs, but it's it actually plays off the feud. So I thought that was pretty good.
He takes a pretty nasty botched elbow to the face too.
Pun intended.
Like he's in the middle of getting up and Knobs jumps. Yeah. And like it's like they don't really time it right. I love too when he comes in, like as he's making his way to the ring, they go over all his highlights in the mm-hmm. Rumble.
Yep.
And Bobby calls him trying to buy a number propaganda. and after his little bit with Knobs kicks the shit out of him. Virgil's in too, so Virgil's after him. Yep. And I think Bobby does a great job early on of like connecting everyone to DiBiase.
Yes.
Similar to how he was connecting everybody to Flair.
Right.
The year before. It's like kind of a poor man's version of that, but
no, it's good.
It's and still he, cool.
Yeah, and it plays up their old issues. They get the front and center battle like we've talked about before, him and Virgil. So get some shine there. And he's hurting, but ducks a charge and Knobs flies out. So as usual, he's kind of hanging and being effective in there.
Yeah. I love, too, the gorilla says, DiBiase is literally cleaning the clock of Virgil.
Just like Virgil used to literally clean his clocks.
Clean. This is wiping the clock down in the house.
This... I don't know if it was the coke or the broken body that he was. I think 93 is a tough year for him, but he definitely looked gassed and in pain. Like he walks and moves way more gingerly. You could tell he's taking a lot more breathers in there. He battles Backlund, then kind of backs off. Like you could tell he's wearing down physically.
Yeah. Well, I wonder if it's probably a combination of that and the D push.
Right.
Because he kind of feels a lot like background fodder for like the real stars, right. Which is sad because it's 1993.
Yes.
The real stars are few and far between.
I think his body was going, and I think this was like, I don't remember when he gets clean, but I think it's like not his best time, like 92, 93. So
you think he decided to get clean after taking some of those chops from Tenryu?
Definitely possible.
Yeah. Because he spends an awful lot of time with Tenryu in this.
Yes. A lot of time. Which is kind of cool in its own regard too. Just a lot of brawling in the corner, Backlund, Virgil, Tenryu, not really focusing on much.
Yeah, a lot of time kicks him in the back once cause he's laying on the ground.
He's constantly in the ground and on his knees, like getting kicked and punched a lot of it. I do like him and Coco, and King kicking out perfect. He's always an opportunist when he was going to shot to pile on. He does it.
Well, and it's funny cause we just talked about him being lethargic,
right?
But as soon as Perfect's on that apron, like the urgency like goes way up.
Right.
Which I really liked.
So a lot of meandering. In comes the Undertaker. Nice bump here. He takes a missile dropkick from Coco, which looks really cool.
Yeah.
And then he escapes Taker in the corner, eliminates Coco and Terry Taylor. So he kind of gets one last blast in before he's done in his Rumble career. And then he turns and Taker chokeslams him with a clothesline him hard to the floor.
Yeah, I love too. At one point, Gorilla says, I mean, this has little to do with DiBiase. He goes, the WWF has done it again in Sacramento. But all I could think about when he says that is The Rock.
Yes.
Thinking about how shitty a town it is.
And it's poetic too that Taker ends his Rumble career since he brought him in.
Yep.
So it was kind of cool. But honestly, if you cut out the middle, like he had a really hot start and a really good finish. So it was soft in the middle, but he was presented okay, racked up four eliminations, but just so much laying around. Just to me, it was so different than his hyperactivity in the past. And he gets a good pop after the flurry and the elimination, but it was disappointing to see. I think physically he was just worn down. I don't think he had it in him anymore.
Yeah, he was just beaten up a bit. And the thing is, it's 25 minutes.
It's a long... I mean, he didn't need to probably go this long. I mean, it is lacking a little star power, but early in the match is where there was star power. Like, I think he could have come in maybe like 9 or 10 and been just as effective in what he ended up doing.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, this whole match could have been structured differently. I have about a 2 for presentation. I just don't think that they were really... I mean, it's hard because... In contrast to everybody else, he probably should be higher.
Right.
But then they didn't really give him too much to do, so that's where I'm at.
I gave him a 3. Like, I felt like they did focus on him quite a bit in the beginning. You know, he gets a lot of shine. All his foes are in there. He's in there with some players. I think he was presented better here than he was, like, a year ago, for sure. And he's tag team champion, so, like, they're playing that up, so...
Yeah, I'm going to bump up my work rate to a 2 based on some of the beginning and the end.
Yeah, he was really worked hard in the beginning, and the stuff with Knobs seems like it really took it out of him, that flurry with Knobs. But then
got an elbow
end,
in the face. So
yeah, maybe he was rattled. I mean, you did mention it. Maybe he was a bit banged up from that elbow, because he does slow down a bit after that. Right. But I love the stuff with, you know, him pouncing on Perfect, and then that flurry to toss goes out, and the bump he takes at the end.
Yeah, it's a good bump. Yep. And effectiveness, I've got a 3. He lasted 25 minutes. He eliminated the most guys he's ever eliminated in a Rumble. So
yeah, no, same. Exactly same.
So that gives him a score of 15. And that ties him with Smash 89, Gang 88, Martel 89, Stud 89, Jannetty 89, Perfect 90, Roberts 96.
I think I am below Martel.
Ahead of Stud?
I just say it's Stud. No, I guess he's lower than that. Maybe ahead of, what was it, Jannetty 89?
It's like, it's Stud 89, then Jannetty 89, Perfect 90.
I guess Roberts, he's below 96. Perfect.
Is what about Jake 96?
Yeah.
Because Jake is only 14 minutes and DiBiase is 25.
I'd go ahead of Jake, I guess.
Yeah. Okay. So that lands him as the 59th. Greatest Royal Rumble performance of all time. And that kind of closes the book on Ted DiBiase, but a good little Rumble career.
Yeah, 4 strong. He made 1 final 2, set an Iron Man record, kind of, you know, set the tone for how to work some of these matches and got us at an all-time kind of talking point with the buying the spot. So yeah, it was a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, before we go into the next guy, what's going on North-South Connection Podcast Network?
There's just a ton of stuff dropping. I'd say 4 to 5 times a week. And it's a lot of evergreen material too, Aaron, right?
Yeah.
So shows like this. Yeah, like No Holds Barred, the Ruthless Aggressive podcast, Extreme Throwaway Dance is back, Wrestling Warzone. Like shows like that you can listen to anytime. And we're deep diving into these eras. So it's not just like, oh, look at this one, Matt, right? We're going like this, like this show. Going into the minutiae, the forgotten moments, and really digging deep. Like, Chad and I talked SummerSlam 96, but my favorite parts of that podcast were digging in on Owen Hart's in-ring legacy, digging in on was that the worst, you know, the bottom of the tag division, right? So, like, really hitting stuff like that versus just talking about the matches. That's what I like about all of our shows. I think we do that pretty well across the board on this feed. But we also do have some timely stuff, too. Like, we'd have a brand new AEW podcast every other Friday with Jordan and Andrew Reich, where they break down the world of AEW, viewers' choice that are, you know, come in hot off the heels of major pay-per-views. So we definitely do have some stuff that is timely as well. But a lot of great content, even outside of wrestling a bit too, with the 90210 chronological rewatch series, Squared Circle to Silver Screen, breaks down different movies that feature wrestlers or about wrestling. So we definitely veer off there as well.
Yeah, second print comics. I mean, we got a good little broad range of topics. So check it out. Subscribe to the feed and let us know what we're doing right, what we're doing wrong. And
and there's new stuff, too. So if you go to my Twitter at JT the Pod Guy, I have a doc pinned that runs down all the current shows. And some new stuff dropped, you know, recently, Chronoso and other things, too. So check it all out.
Yeah, for sure. Hitting Piper next.
Let's do it.
Now entering the Royal Rumble.
Rowdy Roddy Piper.
It feels like one of those things that, like, it's crazy to me that he's not in more of these.
Mm-hmm.
He's only in 3, but his first one in 1990 is incredibly memorable.
Yeah, and if you look at his career, I mean, his big years were before Rumbles. Then he's gone for the first one, comes back right after it, and then he's just kind of always in and out. You know, I don't know another one where he, there's none that he's around for. I guess 91 when he announces. That's the only one I think where he's like active on the roster and not in.
But he's hurt, right?
Yeah, he had the hip thing going on.
Yeah.
So, yes. I mean, maybe you could bring him back.
93.
Yeah, I mean, there, or even like maybe I was thinking like 96, if he comes in a little early, like as a surprise, and then that explains why he's there to become the president.
Right.
He could have done that, but anyway, he comes in red hot here. I mean,
oh.
We talked about it a bit when we did DiBiase a minute ago, but just manic energy and offense working with Jake against Savage and Ted. Tony says he's exploding, and that is like a great way to say it because he's just absolutely rabid.
Well, the way he's running with his hands like out.
Yes.
Like I've never seen anybody run that way. And and the place is going freaking insane. Like for him, like, I mean, the crowd in this Rumble is obviously amazing anyway, but like, it's like they came completely unglued with him.
Yeah. I mean, just, it's awesome seeing him run out. They're fired up.
Yeah, he helps Jake. Up.
Well, Jesse calls him out. He's like, calls him an idiot basically for working with Jake. But yes, it's a great, it's a great fight.
Yeah. They go back to back and then they turn around like as if they're going to punch each other and say, fuck it. And then go back to the heels.
Yeah.
He gets screamed at by Sherry. Which I love.
And he almost, Savage almost slings him out and the crowd gasps like audibly, when he does, but he hangs on. And then he takes a beating from the Warlord, just hard shots.
Oh, yeah.
Just battering him. The crowd loves it when Piper comes fighting right back at him. There's so much constant movement.
How good would in this era, Piper-Savage feud have been?
I know. It sucks that we didn't get it. And Savage doesn't do much. Like, you couldn't have snuck that in here before Dusty, you know? Or along with Dusty, like, Piper working, like, helping Dusty in that feud.
Yeah. Yeah, like, do, like, 80, like... I guess Piper was busy with Rude in 89. I was going to say like late 89 to like mid 90 to
Well,
Savage.
If you scrapped the stupid Bad News feud, you could have done something like, because Rude doesn't do shit either here for a stretch. So why not like collide those feuds together? I mean, I guess it's hard to say you take away the mixed tag because it's kind of monumental, but like Dusty and Piper versus Savage and Rude at Mania 6.
Yeah, makes total sense. It would have been totally good and fun and right. Like, and it wouldn't have had a finish.
Oh, Rude could
it would have been
pin.
A...
Whatever.
Yeah.
I know you're building him for Warrior, but it's fine. And they were never afraid to pin Savage. I mean, he could take the
That's
loss.
True.
Yeah.
That's true. Yeah, I love the sequence with Warlord. Like how he has to fight from underneath with him.
Yeah, it's just awesome energy. Never laying around. We get a fun bit where Piper and Brett work together to take out Warlord and then do a little high five. He almost eliminates DiBiase, just a lot of time with Warlord trying to eliminate him, but he can't do it.
I love that he works so hard to get him up
and
then ultimately fails.
Yes.
There's also a cute little sequence here where like he gets his eyes raked and he can't see.
Yep.
And that leads to him picking up Jake and punching him.
Right.
And it's the only time he attacks Jake.
It's just such a good little nuance from him and everyone in this match, honestly, is a lot of that. He gets trapped in the corner, mashed by Andre. But him and DiBiase turn the tide. Dusty. We get a wild flurry of punches at Giant. There's so many little brawls he has in this match.
Yeah.
And then he tangles with Bad News, of course. He eliminates Bad News, but Bad News reaches up and pulls Piper out. And they brawl all the way to the back.
Yeah. He also bites the Warlord like a fucking vampire at one point.
Yes.
So there's also that. Now this is all leading to the black body incident of... It's not black face, right? I mean, it's part of his face, but it feels like in theory, this should have been a good feud.
I just thinking now, I never dug this deep mentally into it, but I really think they should have held off on the Piper Rude blow off. Like, I think Rude doesn't do anything anyway till Mania. They didn't really have a full come up in. It's like they had the cage at MSG. You know what I mean? Like, so
yeah,
why not just have this be Rude who eliminates Piper? Payback for SummerSlam where he distracts him or something, and then just do that at Mania. If you're not gonna do that tag, I mentioned, just do Piper Rude at Mania. Like, why not blow it off there?
Yeah, and I mean, look, 90's a mess, right? Like, you know, you do that, you don't have perfect job to Hogan or Beefcake, and you do Warrior perfect
at Mania.
No,
after.
After, like, instead of heating up Rude, you just keep perfect hot.
Right. Or just have both of them chasing him. Like, you know, he and his guys are both after him, you know?
Yeah.
Who can get him first? Maybe it comes like a one-up, you know, one-upmanship kind of thing. Like, because they've kind of been playing that anyway. Survivor Series, they have their little miscommunication. in this match, they kind of have the miscommunication. So maybe it's like a rivalry bruise between Bobby's guys of who can take out Warrior first. And now you got Warrior fending them off and helping LOD against Demolition. It just kind of makes him seem a little bit busier.
Yeah, and gives him credible challengers.
Right.
That feels like way too nuanced for their type of storytelling, though. Sure. But yes, I agree. It would be much better.
I mean, you also could have turned Piper heel. You could have had Rude beat him at Mania, turn Piper heel, and challenge Warrior.
Oh, that would have been great.
Right. Like, that's one option. But I thought he was great here. A lot of energy, manic,
yeah.
Pacing. The tag battle was awesome. The crowd feeding off of him. Flurries and offense springing up. It takes out Bad News and sets up the WrestleMania match. This was a great. I almost think it's forgotten, honestly. Like, I don't think too many people think of this as an all-time performance. Not all-time, but as a great performance.
No, I think we're going to see with Piper that he's way better in this than we give him credit for.
Yep.
He lasts 12 minutes, 20 seconds, only one elimination, Bad News, but it leads to the feud. And I will say, too, the fight to the back looks fucking stiff. And the crowd is chanting Roddy. So
yes.
No matter where it goes, in the moment, it was very effective.
Yep.
I'm at a 4 for presentation.
I had a 4 as well.
Yeah, I mean, he's good. Like, he's presented as a near the top card guy, and it works well.
Yeah.
I'm at a 4 for work.
I went 6. I want to reward his manic energy. He literally never stopped. I mean, he never slowed down. The fighting underneath with the Warlord, the stuff with Andre in the corner, working with Dusty, the little high five with Brett, like so many little things, the tag work. Even the elimination, we know how it ends because the Mania thing, but like you said, it should have been something. And that's a memorable too, where they fight all the way to the back. So I just thought it was a very, creative showing for him.
Yeah, definitely. I am at a 4 for effectiveness.
Yes, same.
Okay. So that gives him a total of 26 points.
25.
25. What's wrong with the sum thing on this?
14 and 11.
No, it's 14 and 12.
Okay.
Yeah. 26.
No, did you change something? Because I have you as 4-4-4-3-4.
No, I went 4-4-4.
Okay, got it.
4 is across the board. Okay. I'm on the next sheet, their lists, that's why.
Oh, okay.
That leads him at 26, and that ties him with Jake Roberts, 1992. Now, these are really interesting comparisons.
Oh, God. I think I don't want to go into recency bias, but Jake was great. But didn't he taper off a bit in that at points? Just a little? But the Savage stuff is bigger than this. Yeah, all right. I'd have Jake above, but this might be the closest we've had.
Yeah, it's razor thin. Razor thin.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. They're really similar. They're really interesting, similar runs.
I think the Savage feud and the fact that he's in there with Flair, which is like the biggest Rumble stretch ever, like probably tips it.
Yeah, Flair and Piper.
Right.
Oddly enough.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about that one then. 1992, Roddy Piper.
let's do it. Just an amazing entrance here, of course. He comes in at 15, so dead center in the match. Flair is in there alone. Piper is having a career night, coming off the IC title win against the Mountie earlier, and just a monster pop. And this is like Flair's nightmare. Like, Flair's alone. Yeah. He's exhausted. He's been in there since number 3, and out comes this fucking madman who's been torturing all fall and winter.
And Piper looks so happy to come in and murder Flair.
Yes, he is just having the night of his career right here.
Yeah. I love, too, that he's running so fast that Gorilla can't get his name out. Roddy!
Manic offense. Yeah. Mauls him with great fire. In, out of the ring. Pure assault. All his classic spots. Dodges the atomic drop. Pokes the eyes. Gets the sleeper. Just, like, hitting everything.
Yeah, it's so good. Like, this flurry is so amazing. Mm-hmm. Like, the crowd is losing their minds, too. Yes. Like, this is this might be the hottest they are all night.
Yeah, it's... it's just an awesome moment. And it's coming off Boss Man, too, which is, like, the hottest right before this. You know, like, if he had just Flair just dump Boss Man, and he gets, like, 2 seconds to breathe, and then Piper comes out. It's like, it feels like such a fucking gauntlet.
And an underrated little thing here is poor Bobby.
Yes.
Like, Bobby thinks that Flair's the champion of the world after the Boss Man. And for him to be like, oh my God, he's the champion, to, oh no, Roddy Piper's going to murder him.
Yeah.
Like, he sleepers Flair, like, to death. Like, he just keeps choking him, right?
That's it. He's trying to kill him and then just dump the body. But out comes Jake, and Piper takes some good offense from him. But he's super over. He's fighting off both men. Duggan comes out. Bobby does the classic, you're a skirt wearing freak and all that stuff. It's a kilt.
Thank you, Roddy.
Skirt.
It's a kilt. It's not a skirt. It's the flip flop.
All that's in there, which is awesome as always.
I love too the Flair gives Jake in the figure four, and then Piper stomps both of them.
Yes.
I love that. What a different relationship with Jake from the last Rumble.
Yes, they were best friends last time, and not so much here at all. And then you get kind of, you know, they're scrapping back and forth, Piper and Jake, which is a bit of a dream match. Flair works the legs, and Piper's taking a beating, but his selling is so great as always. Comes back, he smashes Flair with heavy chops, almost knocks him out. The offense is just so wild in here.
Now, when the four of them are in there, Duggan, that's another little cool little sequence.
Yeah. Yep.
Duggan, Flair, Piper, and Jake. Mm-hmm. The crowd is chanting USA. Are they against Roddy Piper here?
All in on Jake and Flair. I mean, and Duggan. Yeah. Everyone but Piper.
Get that Scotsman out of there.
He does fade to the back a little bit as Savage comes in and him and Jake, but he's working hard. You can see him. And he always ends up back with Flair, like gets closer and closer to maybe getting him out.
Yeah. Yeah. Nice double team on Flair with Duggan, which prompts This Isn't Fair from Bobby.
Yes. Ends up with IRS a bunch. Even gets a Boston Crab on him. Gets choked out by Undertaker, but he comes right back. And then we get a pretty classic spot where Taker and Piper are both choking Flair, and then Taker looks up and chokes Piper too.
Yeah. The only person not choking anybody in that trio is Flair.
Right. He's just getting choked by everyone.
Yeah. I love too, there's this great spot where like Jake kind of pulls his head up, like, and Roddy just goes, and pokes him in the eyes.
And then another fun moment was Berserker. Is mauling. Piper's like fighting for his life, and then Berserker just like carries him like a child. Like, he's just, but he's like scrapping for like everything. Like he knows like he's in trouble. And that's one good thing about Piper, and a lot of guys do this in this match, but because of the stakes, like everyone feels like they're really fighting for their lives in there. Like this is such a golden opportunity that they're making it, doing whatever they can to survive.
Yeah, I love it. And then he gets to a fight with Virgil.
Yes.
Like they beat the crap out of each other. And of all people, Berserker saves Virgil.
Berserker really had it in for Piper, this one. But he keeps going at Flair. He's beating on him in the corner. And then a cool moment where Piper stalks behind Hogan and Flair with daggers in his eyes. And he looks like he's going to murder them, but IRS pulls him away before he can act. Like, I want to know who he was going after. It was like his two old rivals. Or his current rival's old rival, yeah. You think he's going to have to... They team up at MSG soon, though, in March. The last MSG house show televised.
Right. I love that moment, and the camera kind of cuts away, like almost too quick there too, because you don't see him really get cut off. You just all of a sudden see he's tied up with whoever there.
Right.
Then Skinner like breathes in his face. I'm sure that's as deadly as anything.
Yes.
Almost gets dumped by Martel and Flair working together too, and then back to fighting with Flair, and then we get this really great showdown with Hogan.
Yeah.
Where the punches and they're both eye raking each other.
It's cool. And then Martel, and then they work together on Martel. But that was a really cool moment seeing them work together. And he's really into this one, Piper. He's all over the place. He's engaging with everyone. At one point, he's out on his feet going at it with Martel. He's haggard, throwing bombs. He eliminates IRS after they battle forever, which is a good payoff.
And that's such a good elimination because he's like on the ground and IRS, and he's pulling him by the tie.
Yep.
Like slowly, 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 and gets him out. I don't know why he punches Sid, why he would do that.
I don't know. Anyone would. Yeah. And he ends up back with Flair a bunch, and he makes the final six, which is, I mean, this is a big night. Wins the IC title and makes the final six. Him and Martel are fighting near the ropes, and Sid comes over and just dumps him.
Which I thought
felt like a bit of a soft ending, given the long run. Like, I would like to see Sid maybe do like a more vicious throw, or have Flair do it, given the rivalry. So that was the only weakness to me here, was this elimination for him. Like, it felt like he was just another guy getting dumped with Martel, you know, versus like getting after this run, he deserved like his own shine to get eliminated.
maybe I haven't seen enough. Maybe that's it. But is 1990, like late 91, early 92 Piper the best Piper in ring?
It's up there. I mean, I think probably 84. Mm. Like, I mean, just ODF, maybe, like, but
right.
If you look at like 83, 84, and you factor in his like Final Crockett stuff and then Snuka and all that shit, like it's that 80. Yeah, I would say WWF 84 to 80, early 86, maybe is his best, and this is probably right behind it.
His energy, it's just his energy is so good here.
Yeah, yeah. No, he's a madman. And I mean, you get the Bret stuff too. I mean, it's up there. It's, yeah, it's September 91 to March 92 is up there for sure.
Yeah, he lasts 34 minutes in this.
Mm-hmm.
Only one elimination, yeah, though, which is a bit surprising.
And I just wish, again, a better ending. But it was a lot of fun. The early stuff with Flair was amazing. Some good through lines and feuds he had going on. Flair and IRS. Wild offense. And good on him. He went 30 after already winning the IC belt. Now, I know that was only like a 2-minute match or whatever, but still, big night for him overall. And that leads to me giving him, you know, he had a strong presentation score. I gave him a 6. Like, he's the new IC champ. He's toe-to-toe with Flair. Makes the final 6. It's a strong night.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm also a 6. I'm a 4 on work. I feel his work is similar to the year before. And I found he did get a bit lost at points in this, but that's just because there were so many guys in the ring.
And he's in there double the time.
That's it.
But I went 5 because the Flair stuff to me is just so good. You get the double choke, the eye poke, you know, the teamwork, the way he eliminates IRS, the Hogan stalking. There's a lot of good stuff in there.
Yeah. I'm at a 5 on effectiveness. I love this run from him. I thought it was really an effective run, even though he didn't eliminate a ton of guys. He was in there forever. After winning the Intercontinental belt, he was a major part of the match. I loved it.
Yeah. I added a 4. I'm going to bump it to a 5.
Okay. You're going to bump it to a 5.
So that's a 31 overall.
Okay. That lands him with a score of 31, which actually makes things a bit easier, I think. No, it doesn't. That ties him with Shawn Michaels 1994 and Shawn Michaels 2008.
Ooh, okay. I mean, you and I are big fans of that 94 Shawn.
Yeah, he's definitely ahead of 08.
Yeah, I think I'd put him.
He's really a big part of this match, too.
I think he's above.
Yeah, I agree.
I just think he means more to a bigger match. Yeah. I mean, Shawn's great in 94, but 92 with Flair just like kind of trumps it.
I think Shawn 94 is that performance you didn't remember was that good.
Right.
Whereas this you remember.
Yes, you know, everyone knows the Piper in this one.
Yeah. So that lands him as the 15th best.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, there's one more tie. And we might want to consider it. I think we should consider it.
Okay.
Because the guy ahead of him, same amount of points, Hulk Hogan 92. I think he should go ahead of Hogan.
I like Piper better than Hogan 92.
So do I. Yeah. He's in there 3 times as long.
And he does it the end ruins Hogan. I don't care. Like, whatever.
Yeah.
That all that bullshit takes away a little bit.
For Hogan. I agree.
And Piper doesn't have that.
So that lands him at the as the 14th best Royal Rumble appearance of all time.
Okay, very good.
So tell me about 2008 while I adjust some stuff here.
Yeah, we got one more from him in 08. He shows back up for a nice surprise in Madison Square Garden, enters at number 19. And right before him, Jimmy Snuka had come in. So both guys were surprise entrants, and it's really cool. A huge pop as he storms out. He's feeling it too. He follows out Snuka. We get a big showdown. Piper's massive, though. His gut is humongous here.
Yeah. He never gave up wearing the shirt.
No, he did not. He had been around recently. Like, 06 is when he was tag champ and all that. So he hadn't been gone too long. But just seeing him and Snuka, it was something that was cool that they did. Like, they should do. Him and Snuka coming out in MSG. Snuka wins the throwdown. Everyone stopping and watching him was awesome. Yeah. They're clawing and scrapping at each other. They end up near the ropes. In comes Kane and just dumps them both. And I think this is booked really well. A good Legends moment. It's a throwback to MSG. Gets a big pop. They don't overstay their welcome. Get it out. This is how this stuff should work. Like, don't linger. Just like Kane, destroy them both and get out of there.
Yeah. The worst thing about it was JR saying, it's deja vu all over again.
Yeah, quote Yogi Berra.
Most redundant fucking thing I've ever heard.
Yogi Berra quote. We'll give him the pass.
All right, look, I'm a 2 presentation.
Me too. The pop he gets, they treat him reverently like a big-time legend, so.
Everybody stops to watch.
Yes.
One for work. It's just some punching and kicking, but it feels good.
Yep.
One for effectiveness.
Yeah, super effective nostalgia moment.
He does have a very strange look on his face when he comes in, though.
that's like current Piper. Like,
yeah,
he took like that old look he used to do, but overdoes it.
Oh, I thought you meant current, like a skeleton.
No, well, that too, but more modern Piper. You know, he's a problem, okay. Right? Modern Piper, like it's only to forgot what worked and just overdoes it. Like right after his first little run in WCW, as he settles in, like that becomes an issue with him, as just overacting and overdoing things.
Right. All right. Well, look, that gives him a total of 8 points.
Not bad.
That ties it with Honky 2001, Hercules 89, Hillbilly 88, Volkoff 88, Santana 90, and Neidhart 91.
Do you like this or Honky better?
I think the comparable is Honky. Yeah. They're very similar. I think this is probably better than.
Yeah, but only because it's MSG with Snuka.
Yeah, it just has. I mean, look, Honky's great. Don't get me wrong, but like, yeah, this was. Do you remember the Honky super well from 01? Is that like a highlight for you?
Yeah, well, that's when he comes out and gets smashed during the hardcore thing with the guitar by Kane, right?
Yeah, but I mean, like in like when you think of the Rumble 08, you think of the Piper bit right away.
Right. Yes. Anyway. Yeah. Yeah. Agreed.
Okay. Well, that lands him as the 96th best Rumble appearance of all time. So let's quickly go through our top 10, shall we?
Yep.
You want to start at number 10 performance?
I do.
Or I can start it since you're.
No, I'm going to get the right tab. We're doing the.
List the individual performances.
Individual performances. Okay, number 10, Shawn Michaels, 1995.
Number 9, Andre the Giant, 1989.
Number 8, Rick Martel, 1991.
Number 7, Bret Hart, 1994.
Number 6, The Ultimate Warrior from 1990.
Number 5, Hulk Hogan, 1990.
Number 4, Shawn Michaels, 1996.
Number 3, Shawn Michaels, 2007.
Number 2, Hulk Hogan, 1989.
And the number one still Shawn Michaels 2010. So no changes. And the closest was DiBiase 90 at 13 and Piper 92 at 14.
Right.
That seems fair enough. All right. Our performers then, top 10. Now this has some changes.
Are we doing the 3+ or just overall?
3+. Okay. So two guys get bumped out of the top 10. Say goodbye to the Barbarian and Greg Valentine.
I think they lasted longer than you ever think they would. So not bad.
So, and now when I was looking at this, the top 10 kind of is making a lot of sense.
Yes.
That's what I, so number 10 all time, this is the cumulative. So it's based on a percentage.
Yep.
An average of all their performances. You have to have at least 3. Number 10, Hacksaw Jim Duggan.
Number 9, Rick the Model Martel.
Number 8, Jake the Snake Roberts.
Number 7, Mr. Perfect.
Number 6, Ted DiBiase.
Number 5, Rowdy Roddy Piper.
Were you surprised he's higher than DiBiase?
No, because I know 93 and that shit bomb in 92. Apparently. No, I mean, right. He was good in it, but I knew those would probably drag DiBiase a bit.
Yeah, and Piper's just concentrated excellence,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Number 4, the Macho Man Randy Savage.
Number 3, Bret the Hitman Hart.
Number 2, Shawn Michaels.
And number 1, the Immortal Hulk Hogan.
Yeah, that top 10 makes sense.
Yes.
Based on who we've seen so far, and it's starting to, you're starting to knock out the guys that are like, really, you know,
right?
Like,
Terry Taylor, yeah. 24. It'll be interesting now. Like our next few, I don't think we have another true contender for a while.
No, I don't think so. I mean, I guess when I was looking at it, the next one is
Undertaker.
Yeah, the guy who's got like a million. But even then, he's got like
some bums. But even his lows to me are like still pretty good.
Yeah. Good.
Yep. All right, that'll do it. We will talk to you in 2 weeks. We'll have a new batch of competitors. What do we got? 3 or 4 guys, I think, in the next one. So 3 guys coming up next. So looking forward to doing that. Keep on rumbling. Talk to you soon.
Goodbye.